No, I can't. You can't follow and act like that.
I know.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thanks, Lee. That's good to
morning.
Know. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think what we're saying, you know, as I talked to you about this when I did the BES presentation, that, you know, we're going to do projects that we've had on the books to, you know, either do green streets or replace pipes.
But it's
and when we do those and they overlay.
Oh, can I borrow that from you? It is. It's not like paper bags. Cool.
I'm not stressing that point in my talking points about contract savings. I'm talking about we're going to concentrate
no,
on.
No, I understand it. But you guys sort of have an email, which means I have to confront it, and I don't want to. Pure financial planning says you're not doing
that. Say something about something different.
Yeah.
Choice. Dean keeps saying that.
Yeah.
I've gone with your piece.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody. I don't have a gavel. Commissioner Fish has my gavel. It is Wednesday, April 14th, 2010. The Portland City Council will come to order. We're in morning session. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. It's a beautiful sunny day out there, isn't it?
It is.
Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. A quorum is present. We will begin with communications. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 488?
Request of Patricia Schaefer to address Council regarding homeless people.
Good morning, Ms. Schaefer. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Welcome back. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, no address.
Patricia Ann Schaefer. Homeless people living on the streets, going to the hospital, the weather change, wrong clothing to wear, no bus tickets, where to go from Portland. If they've been hurt or anything else, like I have been hurt, stranded, and the police knew this. They arrested me for staying outside a store. When you're cold and you're hungry and you're without a place to stay. And I object to this. They hurt me physically and they lied. And I want reconciliation for this. And I would like to tell you something. I met Mr. Bush. And I know that he has been... terrible things have happened, and I just want you to know this, that if they don't do something now to stop this humiliation, I've got dead family members, and I would like this right now stopped.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Can you please read the title for item number 489?
Request of Wesley Reicher to address council regarding AARA sidewalk infill project.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mayor. Commissioners, my name is Wesley Reicher. I live in Southwest Portland. I'm taking the time this morning to speak to you about the use of $2 million in federal stimulus monies from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for a project titled Sidewalk Infill Project. I'm deeply concerned about fairness, equity, and precedent this project presents and the opportunity to strategically do more with these federal stimulus dollars. Fairness. Portland City Code Title 17, Public Improvement 17.28.020, states that the owner of land abutting any street in the city shall be responsible for constructing, reconstructing, maintaining, and repairing sidewalks, curbs, and driveways. Even property owners where sidewalks have been installed, the city standard is required to maintain the sidewalk at their expense, not the city. It's not a budget item. My two adjacent neighbors and I in 2008 inquired about getting our sidewalks along Southwest Chestnut Street, a TSP-designated city walkway installed by the city, and were instructed that the city does not install sidewalks on designated city walkways or other streets. We were told it's the responsibility of the abutting property owner to make the improvements. PBOT did partner with us and installed the curb ramps and curb extensions needed to make the pedestrian and ADA requirements met. And I am still paying off a personal loan to finance the $5,000 sidewalk segment. I'm here today to question why property owners within the sidewalk infill project area are not being required to pay for their sidewalk segments. 82nd Avenue, Barber Boulevard, Gleason east of 122nd, and the connecting routes on 26th Way, Southwest 1st, and especially on Southwest Lauderdale between Capitol Highway and Barber. Equity. It is inequitable to require one portion of the city to pay for right-of-way improvements, and just because $2 million falls in the lap through federal stimulus dollars, the property owners are let off the financial hook. The sidewalk info projects that ARA monies is a slap in the face to others who have paid for their right-of-way improvements. This action by the city is unfair. I'm thinking of myself, my neighbors on Southwest Texas LID, and other improvements in countless areas of the city. Precedent. Using federal stimulus dollars to make these improvements sets a bad precedent, in my opinion. Strategic opportunity. There's a strategic opportunity missed here. The city should be posting these property owners, putting a lien on the property, and using these federal stimulus dollars to bankroll into the future additional sidewalk infill projects. I want to leave you today with a copy of David Walker's Comeback America. It's a book written by David Walker. He is the former comptroller of the U.S. government in the General Accounting Office, talks of the federal deficit and the need to deal with the mounting federal debt. These stimulus dollars came from the federal deficit, and they need to be used more wisely, more fairly, and not set a precedent.
So, Wes, part of the reason I fought so hard to get some federal stimulus money for sidewalks is conversations with you and your neighbors in Southwest over the years. And we had to go through some pretty significant gymnastics to get the federal government to even sign off on this. This is the first time in my quarter century of public service that we've even gotten the federal government in this manner to pay for sidewalks that were not part of a much bigger rebuild project. I think your point's a good one. The irony is that our efforts, come in part as a result of advocacy. The other piece is in terms of where they go, having gone through the gymnastics with the feds and the state, where they end up going is largely, and I'll double check on the finer details, largely state and federally designated corridors. They aren't necessarily even where we would prioritize as our first choice in terms of need. But I don't think that isn't intended to dispute any of your points, which I think are well made, but just to flesh out a little bit of the background.
Can I respond?
Please.
Southwest Lauderdale is not even a city walkway. It's a local street.
And I'll find out about the details.
I think if you're going to do anything, you should be doing it on designated TSP city walkways. Priority.
We would love to do that. Unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with.
And I'm not sure why the street rose to the top.
And
it doesn't make sense.
I find out. I know we were limited in where we could put them and not put them.
And at the same time, I don't know that there's a city policy on the prioritization and the payment of right-of-way improvements in this way. And why would, just because federal dollars are available and the city has received them and is accountable for them, not require them to be paid for by the adjacent property owner and use this money for additional.
No, I think your underlying point is fair. It's just we've got such inadequacies in our sidewalk system. That's why.
All the more reason to be more strategic about it.
There's a different issue there. We can't be, I'm the first to say, we're not being as strategic as we would like with this money because of the limitations put on the money by the federal government, as is true with a lot of stimulus funding. But again, I appreciate the points you've made. Can you please read the title for item number 490?
Request of Cable Hashatani to address council regarding the Stumptown Comics Fest.
Oh, I need the plug-in.
There's a little timer in everything.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Cable Hashatani. I'm the president of the Stumptown Comics Foundation. Wanted to address what our mission statement was and our goals.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Sorry.
Thank you. That's quite all right. Our mission is to promote the format of comic books and graphic novels as a means for storytelling and entertainment, as both an educational and literacy tool, and as a cultural art form. And to also support the community of professionals working within this field. Portland is estimated about a third of the comic book industry lives and works here in Portland, which is pretty significant. To reach our goals, we use the Stumptown Comics Fest, which has been held annually every year since 2004. It is creator-focused so that people can meet with the artists and writers of these comic books and independent publishers and small press, such as Dark Horse, Oni, Top Shelf, Shadowline, Sparkplug, and Cellar Door, to name a few. We have worked with partners such as McTarnahan's, the Portland Center for Performing Arts, and the Wordstock Festival to this end as well. We hope to work more with the city. We've been working with them for the past few years and have managed to get April declared Comic Book Month now for 3 years running. And there's the proclamation right there. We look to work with the city because the comic book professionals that live here help enhance the city of Portland both culturally and financially. The Stumptown Comics Fest brings in quite a few travelers and visitors not only to exhibit at the fest but to attend the fest, and we are an international fest. I believe we have an exhibitor coming in from New Zealand this year, and we've had an international guest every year, I think, since the fest began, or at least from the second year. We will be hitting our 10th anniversary in 2013, and so we'll be spending the 2011, 12, and 13 building up to that. We want to work to do more fundraising. We're a non-for-profit organization, and we'd like to use funds to create more educational scholarships. There are universities in town that teach comic books as courses. PNCA has a sequential art degree. And look to give out publishing grants to independent and small press comic book creators. And I do have a few press kits to leave behind for the council.
I think we have one more related communications. Is that right, after you?
That's correct.
But I just want to thank you personally and the leadership team with the festival for doing a fantastic job. The growth of the event year to year has been phenomenal. And I encourage, in addition to proclaiming April Comic Book Month, encourage all Portlanders to attend. When and where is the...
It will be April 24th and 25th at the Lloyd Center Doubletree Hotel in the Exhibition Lounge, and Exhibition Hall. And Shannon Stewart, to my right here, is the director of this year's fest and last year's fest as well.
Good job, Shannon. We're going to hear from the other folks, and then stick around. We'll take a quick picture with the council and our constituents and the proclamation.
Excellent. Thank you.
Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 491?
Request of Benja Barker to address council regarding the Alter Egos Society.
And the other two sitting by you can come up as well if you want to sit down next to him. Can you move? You can all come up and stand around if you want, so our cable TV audience can get a good look at you. You've got something on your head.
It's my brainwave amplifying helmet.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Benja Barker. I'm the founder of the Alter Ego Society. The Alter Ego Society is a group of artists, organizers, superhero enthusiasts, and functional nerds that have been hosting costumed superhero events and making superhero film and video projects in Portland since 2007. And I have some promotional kits here with more information about that and about a movie that I'll be talking about further. We dress like superheroes and villains because we love them. It's our mission to make opportunities for people to be creative and wear tights in public. We find creative ways to both have fun and to be of benefit to the community. Superheroes are an accessible touchstone in popular culture that transcends social boundaries like little else in our diverse world. They appeal to a diverse range of people within our local community and far beyond. Over the past 2.5 years, the Alter Ego Society has built partnerships with local businesses and organizations like the Stumptown Comics Foundation to support getting people involved in our superhero-themed events. We've created 2 annual events, the Alter Ego's Power Struggle, a hero versus villain pub crawl done as part of Portland Comic Month, and to give something back to the community more tangible than people in tights and amused bystanders, Alter Ego's Hero Villain Ceasefire Party, a costume party charity fundraiser for the local nonprofit PEAR. Our first event in 2007 was a benefit for PEAR to aid their mission of mentoring homeless and transitional youth in Portland. We've made a 50-minute long film called Archives of the Fantastic, The Ninth Cosmic Convergence. It's a tongue-in-cheek homage to superheroes, which we premiered at the Baghdad Theater last July. All the money that has and will be raised from DVD sales and screenings of the movie go to PEAR. In addition to 3 other screenings and around 100 DVDs sold so far, we'll be releasing a second edition of the DVD to be made available online and at several local comic shops in June, with the profits continuing to go to PEAR. Making the art we love while helping the community is a model we intend to build upon in future projects, from film to events. Obviously, we love the superhero genre and dressing in costume. Dressing up in costume and fighting crime doesn't make sense in the real world. Dressing up in costume, having fun, and raising money for charity does.
Ha ha!
Security.
Even as comic books expand beyond the superhero genre, superheroes are expanding beyond comic books. As the Alter Ego Society, we want to explore the various mythos of the superhero genre through costume making, role playing, and filmmaking, and we think that can play a heroic role in our community along the way. Thank you for your time.
So stay there. Stay there. We will. Come on. Let's see if they can tell the difference between us. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, I've got a spare one of these for you if you want to swap the glasses.
Yeah, do you want to do it here?
They're already lined up. We'll just do it this way. Polly's ready.
You don't tell Spider-Man dressing up in a costume and fighting crime doesn't make sense.
That's right.
They will not like that.
Occasionally, Randy gets in tights.
1, 2, 3. Let me get one more just for safety.
Biking.
Actually, I find them very comfortable.
1, 2.
Lounging around the house.
They are quite comfortable.
Hold on, 1 second.
No, when you have to wear them every day, they're not.
We just got one.
Okay, great. Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Best? So you take this.
It's a great deal.
All right. Can you please read the title for item number 492?
Request of Ulysses Hardiman to address council regarding disrespect of the Portland Charter and Oregon and U.S. Constitutions.
Mr. Hardiman, welcome back.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honor. Saltzman. Hey, Mr. Fish.
Go ahead and have a seat, Mr. Hardiman.
Mr. Leonard. Yeah, Ulysses Hardiman. Darn, Mayor Adams, I have to come over here and see y'all again. Boy, everybody's having a great time. It's good to see, you know. I'd like to have a good time, too. As you know, I guess Black History Month is over with. And I guess our efforts didn't work. I wasn't able to get my economic program operating. I wasn't able to get back the essential piece of equipment. Can't deliver pizzas and newspapers without that car. But I wanted to ask the council, if I may be so bold, I just can't believe it. All these efforts, and your good wishes, Your Honor, and your good wishes, Mr. Fish. I can't believe it. All these good wishes and efforts just were for nothing. I mean, really. I mean, Albert Einstein said that energy is neither created nor destroyed. So where'd all that energy go? But what I want to know, and I hope that maybe you'll communicate with me, how is the council effectively communicated with? In communicating with the council, I guess maybe I could have been told about the TOE hearings. That may have been a remedy there. I could have been told about the risk operation. That may have been a remedy there. So perhaps somebody would be so good as to enlighten me. How is the council effectively communicated with? What, short of marching in the streets? I don't know. I get on some tights.
Mr. Hardiman, I know that we've helped you establish some communication and work with JOIN, and I hope that that will continue. I rest assured we have spent significant time trying to improve your situation, as you know. Communications with the council, me, my staff, and others. And I encourage you to continue to work with JOIN, who is a partner with the city. I think the best path forward, and I want you to be successful and happy, is to continue to work with them. All right?
JOIN?
We have Jenny Peckinpah here who can assist with making sure that you connect with them.
Okay, I'll do that. But as you know, I mean, tomorrow's tax day. You know how much money I made all this year while we've been talking? I didn't make a dollar.
Right, and that's why.
I mean, I was hoping only to make like about somewhere between around $800,000 a month.
I want to get your help, and that's why we are partners with organizations like JOIN. So I really need you to follow up on that, okay?
Well, I'm a working man, Your Honor. I've been a working man since I was 3 years old. And I know a lot of things on how to work. I simply asked to be allowed to work. I mean, I volunteer a lot. I volunteered for over 4 years with Union Gospel Mission. I
appreciate that. And JOIN is a very effective organization, and so Jenny here will once again.
Of course, Your Honor. I'll talk to her right now.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
so much. I appreciate
your
time. All right, that gets us to a proclamation read by Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Whereas Toastmasters International is a nonprofit educational organization with nearly 250,000 members in more than 106 countries, offering a low-cost way for men and women to practice and hone communication, listening, and leadership skills. And whereas Portland Toastmasters was the 31st Toastmaster Club to be chartered and the first Toastmasters Club in Oregon, and whereas there are now 150 Toastmasters Clubs in the greater Portland area, and whereas members learn valuable communication and leadership skills in an interactive and supportive environment, whereas people of diverse backgrounds and interests are welcome to participate in Toastmaster Clubs, and whereas April 17th will be the 75th anniversary of Portland Toastmasters Club 31, now therefore Sam Adams, the mayor of the city of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim April 14th, 2010, to be Portland Toastmasters Day in Portland, honoring Portland Toastmasters, whose communications and leadership training has benefited the social and business communities of this city for 75 years.
All right, that takes us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? All right, can you please?
We had 512 was pulled by Commissioner Saltzman's office.
512. Okay, anything else? All right, please call the vote on the consent agenda.
Fritz?
Well, I want to thank David Schaff of the Water Bureau and Dean Marriott of the Bureau of Environmental Services for answering my questions. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. We will now move to our time certain. Can you please read the title for 493?
Willamette River Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel Project Update.
Oh, thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to bring forward another update on Portland's Combined Sewage Overflow Program, commonly known as the Big Pipe Project. We have made significant progress in the last year. We have completed the north drive of the east side Big Pipe Project and have begun tunneling to the south from OMSI on our final drive to the homes in the home stretch. We started construction of the Balch Consolidation Conduit in northwest Portland, which will capture the remaining overflows on the west side of the Willamette River. Construction is underway in the Selwood neighborhood on projects to control the final east side outfalls into the Willamette River. So I want to take a moment, first of all, to thank all the residents and businesses for their patience with all these projects impacting almost every quadrant of the city. And Portlanders should also be proud that in more than 18 years of working to control combined sewage overflows, the city and its contractors have met all required milestones and finished every project on or ahead of schedule. And literally thousands of local family wage jobs have been created through these projects, and that continues. We'll see some specific numbers in the presentation. Ultimately, this is about the overall health of our city and our river, and the outlook is good on this effort. We can literally see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that will be covered in more detail as we finish this project in a little more than 21 months. So Environmental Services Director Dean Marriott and Project Manager Paul Gribben will start the presentation.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and members of the council. I'm Dean Marriott, and with me is Paul Gribben, our chief engineer for the tunnel projects. Had I known this was Superhero Day in front of council, I would have suggested that Paul dress up, because in my book, he is our superhero. The reason that this program is doing as well as it is because of his dedication and hard work. With that, we'd like to begin the presentation. We have a few slides for you. I think Paul and I have been here about 16 times in the last 8 years, and you may have gotten tired of hearing from us, but the good news is we have about three more reports to go if we stay on our current schedule, so I'm sure we'll all be happy about that. The first slide is sort of a historical context. It begins in 1991 with the signing of the Combined Sewer Overflow Agreement with the state of Oregon that set us on this path, this 20-year odyssey for cleaning up the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough. And I have put on there some of those intermediate time.
Just to put a finer point on that, mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt it, as a result of a court action.
Yes, the city was threatened with a lawsuit, and there's no question that it was partly what drove the city to sign that agreement. We did a facilities plan in 94, and we went back to the state and in a collaborative fashion with the Oregon EQC and DEQ amended the agreement to make it a more achievable and affordable agreement, and have been proceeding on that basis ever since. Completed the work to restore the health of the Columbia Slough as far as the combined sewer overflow impact in 2000 on schedule. Completed the West Side projects in 2006 on schedule, and are about to complete next year the East Side projects in 2011. The next slide shows the downward trend, the very positive trend in volume of combined sewage overflow reaching the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough. As I mentioned, in 2000, we finished the slough project, so the slough has been essentially free of combined sewage overflow since 2000. Basically, in three phases, the first was stormwater separation. We did a lot of work in many neighborhoods in Portland to actually improve the performance of the stormwater system, keep that stormwater out of the combined sewer system, inflow controls such as downspout disconnection, and began work on the Columbia Slough projects. Some of those efforts continue, which is why the dotted line on this slide indicates that the phase one work continues. For instance, the downspout disconnection efforts continue to this day. Phase two in red on this slide shows the west side projects, project begun just after 2000 and completed by 2006 on time, and then phase three, the east side projects. Just again, a summary of the major programs and their dates for requirements. December 2000 for the SLU work, that was completed on time. December 2000 for West Side, December of 2006 for the West Side projects, and then December of 2011 for the East Side projects. Just a couple of slides here to talk a little bit about inflow controls. I mentioned the downspout disconnection program. This has been a fabulously successful effort. Not only has it done an enormous job in taking stormwater off of the system, we estimate about 1.5 billion gallons of stormwater annually out of the sewer system, which is just a tremendous benefit in relieving the CSO program. But we've also engaged over 26,000 Portlanders and homeowners and property owners and property managers on how to better manage stormwater on their site, and disconnected over 50,000 downspouts. So we have not only done a good job for the environment, we've done a terrific job in engaging Portlanders on understanding the environment and their relationship to the river. You're very familiar with the impact of green infrastructure on our efforts to clean up the Willamette. This is just a photograph of some of the examples, flow-through planter on the lower left, or the picture of the Portland building with an eco roof on top, and a green parking lot on the lower right-hand side. Again, our effort is to manage stormwater as close to where it hits the ground or a rooftop as possible. Speaking of rooftops, we've had an enormously successful eco roof program here in Portland. Over 400,000 square feet of eco roofs just in the last decade. We hope to add another 40 acres of eco roofs in the next 4 years, and we're well on that glide path to being successful. These are just terrific. Not only do they aid with energy consumption for a building, they're really energy efficient for a building. They also are enormously successful for stormwater management. They can often reduce between 50 and 80% of the volume of stormwater that leaves the rooftop, so very effective. And a final slide on green infrastructure, green street facilities. There's been a lot of discussion of these lately, but we have been enormously successful in, we have over 700 green street facilities in Portland now, and we plan to add at least another 500 in the next few years. Again, they work wonders as far as stormwater management. They also help with traffic calming and, again, very successful in engaging citizens in a better relationship to their community. I'm now going to turn it over to Paul, who's going to get into some of the details of the East Side project.
So if you look at the solid red line on that chart, that shows the amount of tunnel that's already been completed. As Commissioner Salzman mentioned, the machine is now heading south from the upper shaft towards the Taggart shaft, so they're on their last leg. They have about 8,000 feet to go. They actually got started on the south drive about a month ahead of schedule, so they're really doing well. And the contractor, Keywood Bilfinger-Berger, has really done an outstanding job so far. This is the basic construction contract. In 2011 dollars, worth $426 million. We originally had a $38 million contingency based on the risk analysis that we did. We have since dropped that contingency down to $16 million, looking at the work that we have left to do. So as far as the contractor is concerned, we seem to be doing pretty well. As I said, contingency budgets are put together based on the risk that a contract presents. As I said, we started out with $38 million. We're about 80% complete with the construction contract. We've crossed a lot of risks off our list. We still have a few left. As I said, we're carrying $16 million. Hopefully, we will never have to use any of that. Employment, as far as subcontracts are concerned, Keywood Bilfinger-Berger has hired 184 first-tier subcontracts. Most of them, overwhelming majority, have been local. And including subcontractors and second and third tier, it's almost 400 total subcontracts. Our Minority Women Emerging Small Business goal of 26 million. We've already exceeded that by over 2 million, and we still have about a year and a half left to go. And we've got right now about 190 craft workers directly employed on the project. Some of the other projects that have to come together at about the same time in 2011, the Portsmouth Force Main Segment 1 and 2, currently both underway, about 65 construction jobs currently. We have to do a slight expansion to Swan Island Pump Station, and then there are two other projects ongoing now, Selwood Pump Station and the Balch Consolidation Conduit. All of them are contributing jobs to the local economy at the present time. Those jobs have ripple effects, and this is our basically job equivalent based on our construction expenditures of the amount of money we're putting into the local economy right now to put all these projects together. So it's keeping people employed right now. Green infrastructure, the same way. We're looking at about 85 direct jobs as a result of that in fiscal year 2010. And related to green investments, it's an estimated 210 private sector jobs. So the total number of jobs created in 2010 is about 200, just shy of 300 jobs. Getting back to the east side, safety was also a major issue for us. And so far, our incident rate is 2.7, which is 50% of the statewide average on heavy construction jobs, which for a tunnel job is really good. Our goal was 50% of the state average, so we're right on our goal. We do have an owner-controlled insurance program insured by SAFE. And right now, of the 9 owner-controlled insurance plans in the state, we're ranked second. I want to talk a little bit about Portsmouth Force Main. This is a 3-mile, 66-inch diameter main we're putting in across Swan Island, under Ward Bluff, under Willamette Boulevard. It's going to carry flow from the east and west side tunnels to the existing Portsmouth Tunnel. We are having difficulty with one of the construction contracts right now. We have encountered some delays. This was, as far as segment 2 is concerned, our original estimate for this project, which included contingency, included our look at the risks we're taking, is $30 million. As you know, the low bid came in at 19.3. Our original change order authority was 25% of that amount, or $24 million, still considerably under what our estimate was. In the initial mining under Wad Bluff, we've hit a difficult combination of boulders and soft ground, very difficult to get through. Typically, when you're mining boulders through soft ground, they have a tendency, rather than get ground up, they roll around in front. They have to go in and break them out. It's so far resulted in a 4-month delay. The ordinance that we had to increase the contract authority was simply a look ahead at if this problem continues, it's possible we could exceed our change order authority. As of yet, we haven't. So it's just strictly a look ahead. It is not an emergency in any respect. And that's what that was for.
So the original estimate was $35 million, if I recall correctly.
Our engineer's estimate before we went out to bid was $30 million.
Before that, it was placeholder was 35.
Placeholder was 35. Okay.
Which is normal to get more refined and more exact as you go from best guesstimate to engineer's estimate to bid to actual completion of the project.
That's correct. I'll turn it over to Dean for the remaining challenges.
All right, Paul, we just want to summarize for you. This is a program, as Commissioner Salzman had mentioned. It does involve a number of component parts, many of which are completed, but I wanted to just highlight for you that, in fact, there are several facilities under construction that have to come in on time as well as the tunnel. All these things are going to be interconnected. It'd be great to have the tunnel done on time, but if some of these other pieces are not completed, then we can't declare success for the overall program. So there's a number of challenges facing us over the next 21 months, and I've listed them here. And Paul, if you'll flip the map, we can show you physically on the map here. Of course, items 1 and 2 on this map indicate the Portsmouth Force Main connected to the Swan Island Pump Station. Item 3 is the last remaining west side significant project, the Balch Consolidation Conduit, which is going on in the Industrial Northwest District. And then down in the southern part of the map, you'll see the Selwood pump station number 4 on this map. Just have a couple of slides about each one. The Balch Conduit is a very complicated project weaving its way throughout the Industrial Northwest District. It's got a combination of purposes. One is to control one remaining outfall for CSO outfall to the river. But also what we discovered was a number of these major sewer conduits were in desperate need of repair and replacement, so we decided to combine those two projects together. The other thing is just working under difficult ground conditions. This is in the area of what used to be Giles Lake when the Lewis and Clark Exposition was there. It was all water. It was a wetland. So the soil conditions are very challenging. So we're working our way through that area, and I want to just underscore Commissioner Saltzman's appreciation for the fact that the local businesses and employers, employees, and customers of those businesses have been showing a tremendous amount of patience in working around the construction sites, and we really appreciate that. This is a photograph of one of the complicated pieces of machinery that's on the job right now, and I'd be happy to organize any kind of field trips if people want to go out on one of these nice spring days and see just what the crews are dealing with in order to bring these projects home. The next slide is a picture of the microtunnel boring machine that we're using on this project. It has to construct an 8,500-foot pipeline tunneling between 20 and 70 feet below the surface. So it's, a very complicated situation. The next slide shows you in some detail a location of the Selwood pump station. Again, its purpose is to relieve one of the remaining outfalls on the west side of the river. And it's a complicated job to tie into the system so that we can, again, alleviate these CSO outfalls to the river. And Paul, I'll turn it back to you. This is a picture of the Opera Shaft site.
This is a picture of the site back in 2007. We have a big coordination effort that's ongoing right now with streetcar and light rail. So currently this year, streetcar is going to be coming through and doing work, and we've been coordinating with the Bureau of Transportation and Streetcar Inc. And accommodating them and the work that they have to do. And when we get into the spring of 2011, it's going to get further complicated by the work that TriMet has to do. So we're basically going to have three contractors working on for three different owners on the same site. Not something you plan, but we are so far successfully working our way through this, and so we hope that no one is impacted by anybody else's work. But it's a big coordination effort, and so far we've been successful. And normally this would be a report from the Eastside Review Committee. Bill Martinek called and said they were unable to make it this morning, and so there's not anyone here from the Review Committee as far as I'm aware of, but I don't know of any major issues that they were going to raise.
And we will, of course, invite them to the next update. So, with that, well, that concludes our presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
This is a report. Has anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
And, I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to accept the report. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish.
Thanks for your good work and for an outstanding presentation. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, this is the largest public works project in the city of Portland's history, about $1.4 billion. And so I want to not only extend my appreciation to all the ratepayers that are paying for this project, very important project, to clean up the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough, two bodies of water that we all cherish. But I also want to thank the Bureau of Environmental Services staff, the contractors and the subcontractors for helping us to get this project done on time and on budget and keeping it a very safe work project overall. We've had very few injuries, and that's not coincidental. That is by design and constant attention and vigilance to working in some very challenging environments. It's often 100 feet beneath the surface. So we will be proud to we'll be very proud when this project's finished in December of 2011. And again, I just want to thank all the people that have been involved and thank the businesses and the citizens for their patience in putting up with the construction. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for your leadership in this and indeed for mentioning that the ratepayers are paying for the correction of the last century's problems when we didn't as fully understand the importance of river health. And in looking at those pictures, I'm thinking jobs and recognizing that indeed the ratepayers are funding those good construction jobs that are correcting this problem. So thank you, Dean Marriott and Paul Gribben and all of the BES staff who work on this project for your continued diligence to schedule safety, public outreach, and keeping costs down on this massive undertaking. And I thank the Eastside Citizens Review Committee for the hours that they devote to monitor and review the process and for their insights and advice. Thank you for addressing the reasons for the change order on the Portsmouth Main project. It shows how important it is that we stay on track with accomplishing our goals in the CSO project and that each individual contract has its part to play in meeting those deadlines. And thank you to the member of the Portland Utility Review Board who raised the issue ahead of time so that I was able to get my questions answered on that. I'm very pleased this project remains on schedule and under budget. Aye.
Adams.
Well, Commissioner Salzman, I had the Bureau for 3.5 years, but you were the commissioner in charge as this project was really coming together. So you're the architect of it, and I just want to underscore this project is under budget and on time. And you've been able to oversee it so well that an additional $22 million in savings was able to come out of contingency. So I want to thank you for that. The ratepayers, I know, are appreciative of that. I want to thank the team at BES. All great, difficult job, really difficult job. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I know we will all look forward to having this project completed. Aye. All right. Can you please read the title for time certain, item number 494?
Authorize a memorandum of understanding with Portland Public Schools and Friends of Grant Athletics regarding field improvements at Grant Park and Grant High School.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and colleagues, the ordinance before you this morning asked the council to approve a non-binding memorandum of understanding between Portland Parks and Rec, Portland Public Schools, and the Friends of Grant Athletics. The Friends of Grant Athletics has asked for permission to raise private funds to improve the ball fields at Grant High School. Although it is not technically necessary to bring this MOU to council, I thought it was important for you, my colleagues, to hear the background, process, and intentions of this agreement. This is a citizen-initiated project launched by a variety of community stakeholders, including coaches, student athletes, parents, community supporters, and neighbors. This project, if it is greenlit, will help us address a compelling need in our park system, enhancing the quality and safety of our sports field, and it would do so by leveraging private dollars. Ensuring that all Portland youth have quality sports and recreational facilities and opportunities is a top priority for me as your Parks Commissioner. And I know firsthand with two children who play in our parks on a regular basis. While I am very proud of our park system, we know there's a big discrepancy between the quality of fields that children and our suburban partners enjoy and the fields that our kids have here. And quite simply, the hardest hit are our grass fields, which are being loved to death. Last week, Council approved another MOU, an innovative partnership between St. Mary's Academy, Portland City United, and other partners to leverage private dollars to build two turf fields at Benson High School. This council has also been supportive of working with Park Rose High School and Roosevelt High School to upgrade their athletic fields. These are all great examples of public-private partnerships that improve the safety and quality of play for both high school and community sports teams. To kick off the presentation, I'd like to ask Eileen Argentina, the service manager for Portland Parks and Rec, to give you a brief overview of the background. We have then a panel that we've invited to provide a little more context. We'll then take some testimony, and we'll ask for your support. Eileen, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Eileen Argentina. I'm the services manager for Parks and Recreation. Grant Park excuse me. Grant Park is a beautiful 20-acre park in inner northeast Portland, which is heavily used for a variety of active and passive recreation activities. It's directly adjacent to Grant High School, with the upper sports field straddling the property line shared between the two. The athletic facilities in the park support the Grant High School athletic programs as well as many other community sport programs. The issue before you today goes back quite a while, to the early 2000s, when a group of Grant High School athlete parents and supporters began to seek ways to improve athletic facilities for the students. These efforts have been community-driven and have focused on how to create public-private partnerships to accomplish the goals. As a vision for the future began to take shape, so did the need to ensure a meaningful way to involve and inform all of those who care about, use, and live near Grant Park. In 2005, the group initiated an outreach process which spanned 2005-2006. The process was more comprehensive than would have been feasible for either PPS or PP&R to do with existing resources for this unfunded proposal. It was really made possible through a significant amount of volunteer time and coordination by the Friends Group. It included all the elements that would typically be used in a broad public involvement process, such as surveys, open houses, focus groups, briefings, that kind of thing. PP&R feels confident that the process did result in a high level of awareness about the proposals and provided a forum for community members to express their feedback and raise concerns. During 2007, after receiving a report on the results of the process, PP&R and PPS staff worked together to determine what, if any, next steps were feasible based on the reported results of that process. Those results stressed the sensitivity around changes that could generate significant increased impact on the surrounding neighborhood or on other park uses, primarily noise, traffic, curbside parking, litter, vandalism, other increased passive usage. 2 years ago in 2008, PP&R and PPS staff scheduled an open house for the community to kind of close the loop on the process, share all the resulting information, and let stakeholders and other interested parties see how the feedback from that outreach process had resulted in changes to the scope of proposed improvements. And essentially, the position that we took, the two agencies took, was that we would support improvements that better served existing uses. But more significant changes, such as permanent lighting, amplification, access control, would require a much more extensive process, including a conditional use approval. There was some community disappointment expressed after hearing about the scaled-back scope, and at least one major funder backed out. But about a year ago, the Friends Group renewed their contact with us and indicated their interest in moving forward with fundraising for this reduced scope. Continuity is often a challenge in trying to move an issue like this forward, so it's taken a while to get to this point. But they asked for a written document to confirm that the proposed improvements that they sought to raise funds for would be supported by PPS and PP&R. The MOU that is the subject of today's action is that written document. And as the commissioner said, it's a non-binding statement of intended outcomes, roles, and responsibilities. We are supportive of these improvements if funds can be raised to pay for them. The scope of improvements attached to the MOU includes refurbishing, renovating, and improving the existing facilities to better support the current uses at the park. Grant Park's athletic facilities are among our most intensively used, short of our stadium facilities and Delta Park sports complex. If fully realized, these improvements would result in significantly improved fields, track facilities, pedestrian and jogging facilities, and targeted safety and security lighting on both park and school grounds. The complete list is Exhibit A to the MOU. I know there's going to be additional testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Eileen. Mayor, we've invited three people to provide brief testimony before we go to public testimony. And I'd like to call forward at this time Cameron Vaughn Tyler from Portland Public Schools, Lloyd Lindley from the Friends of Grant Athletics, and Jeff Hyde, who is the president of the Grant Park Neighborhood Association. Welcome all. And Cameron, why don't you kick us off?
I'd love to. Thank you so much for having us here. Members of the City Council, my name is Cameron Vaughn Tyler, and I'm a Partnership Development Manager at Portland Public Schools. On behalf of all of us who are working to improve the athletic facilities for our students by encouraging private support for capital improvements, thank you for this opportunity to support this ordinance. I would be remiss if I do not thank Lloyd Lindley, the founder of the Friends of Grant Athletics, who with many other members has worked tirelessly for, I have several, but actually it's many, years to get this initiative off the ground. It was their vision from their own experiences at Grant High which motivated this action. They asked, why should our kids be required to play competitive sports on non-competitive surfaces? where the football field is rock hard and rutted at the beginning of the football season, where as soon as the rains begin, the fields are massive mud pits, where the soccer field significantly slopes to the left and makes it just that much harder to score a goal. Although, knowing that last deficiency does give Grant the home field advantage.
Uh-huh.
Don't tell.
Depends on how the wind blows.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're very grateful to Portland Parks and Recreation staff for helping to shepherd this project and to work with us on a plan for accomplishing the field improvements if funding is successful. Also for their collaboration with us on public outreach, particularly given the sensitivities of neighbors in this or in any close-in neighborhood. And we are especially grateful, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership in getting this moving and for encouraging the right partners to come together in a mutually supportive way. This project has strong support from athletic teams, sports leagues, and community members who rely on Grant Park to provide a place to compete, to recreate, and for everyone to enjoy on evenings and weekends. We recognize that residents live in close proximity to these facilities and deserve to be protected from any capital facility plan that would negatively impact the livability of their homes. For that reason, the partners have scaled back their plans and are focusing on simple improvements that will positively affect the playing surfaces of these facilities. And assurances have been made to manage the numbers of users and to commit to no increases in park permits beyond the current level of use. Portland Public Schools is committed to the fact that our public school system is one of the positive factors that attracts and retains residents with families in our neighborhoods. Families help to provide vitality and energy to our communities. One of the Grant neighbors stated that if we are to maintain a city that welcomes families and children, we must provide safe and functional places for them to play. Our school facilities and the parks around them are central to all of the neighborhoods we serve. Finally, this initiative fits our board's policy on student wellness, which calls for student health and wellness through good nutrition and increased physical activity. But facilities need to be adequate in order to support this goal. It's a sad state of affairs when public agencies like Portland Public Schools and Portland Parks don't have the financial resources to manage and improve our facilities without outside support. Because of this, we are so grateful when an organization like Nike, who has helped us to complete several of our high school fields and tracks, as well as the Roosevelt Track Committee, the Lincoln, Wilson, and Cleveland groups, and now the Friends of Grant Athletics, and I'm very pleased to hear today about the Benson Group, plus the countless other committed groups and businesses who recognize the impact our facilities have in every community, and they're willing to help with much-needed financial and other assistance. Quite simply, we couldn't do it without their help. Thanks again to this council and to our generous communities for your continued support of time, energy, and financial help to our schools. It's appreciated beyond measure. And I'd like to add that I'm also submitting a letter of support from Nike today as well as my testimony. Thank you so much for having us here.
Thank you, Cameron, very much. Lloyd?
Lloyd Lindley, 3005 Northeast 16th. Mayor Adams, City Council members, thank you for having us here today. This is a big day for our organization and our broad constituency, and we're looking forward to your support on the Grant Park and High School Restoration Improvement Plans. I represent a broad constituency of supporters for Grant High and Park Improvements. I have been involved in this effort since 2000, and would like to thank Commissioner Fish for bringing this memo of understanding before you today. We believe that the proposed improvements will be good for the school, good for the athlete's safety, good for the neighborhood, good for economic vitality that keeps people in our neighborhood, and most importantly, good for the student athletes that participate in neighborhood and school sports and represent us regionally, statewide, and throughout the nation. Our public process listened carefully and addressed neighborhood needs and concerns through provided or improved pedestrian park and school lighting, pathway lighting, improving safety, adding ornamental trash receptacles, relocating the baseball scoreboard away from U.S. Grant Place, which is no little issue, installing and localizing a specially designed sound system that will keep the sound within the playing areas. In respect to neighborhood concerns and comments, I want to be very clear. We eliminated from the original plan permanent seating, ornamental fencing on 33rd and U.S. Grant Place, and athletic field lighting. Those were all eliminated from the original plan in response to the neighborhood. We're here today to support the MOU and will establish a not-for-profit corporation to conduct a capital campaign to raise funds for the proposed improvements. I have provided an organization chart that illustrates our board responsibilities. Tony Honorich will chair our capital campaign committee. Patty Farrell, who is here today, will direct communications, and I will be responsible for coordinating board activities for Portland Public Schools and Portland Park and Recreations for implementation of the improvements. This part